the more conservative, the better. Conservative equals good and right, you know. And if you were more conservative, you were holier and better. And it was just, it was the way that things should be done. And then as I began to read the Bible for myself and so forth, I went to an equally simplistic and wrong view that liberal was better. The more liberal you were, the better you were following Jesus and that sort of thing. That view was equally bad. It's only been after quite some time, and I'm still learning this and fleshing this out, but I've come to realize that following Jesus really has very little to do with conservatism or liberalism. Certainly, and please understand, I'm talking within a fairly narrow range here. And as we think about it, as we think about the possibilities for our church as conservative Mennonites, it really has very little to do with following Jesus. I see very conservative people, very liberal people within our church serving Jesus very well, and I see the opposite as well. I've just learned that it doesn't have a lot to do. In Mennonite history, recent Mennonite history that I'm acquainted with, we've seen a pattern far too often, it seems, of church splits, nasty church splits. And you have the conservatives on one side, and they're going to stay conservative, and they're going to do the right thing, and they're going to be holy. And you have the liberals who are also convinced that they're doing the right thing, and they're going to, you know, change things to fit with the Bible, and they're going to reach out, and they're going to evangelize, and they're going to do all these things. And really, you know, the unfortunate thing that I often saw was, and a lot of conservatives saw, was that the liberals often wouldn't end up evangelizing. It was more their true motives would come out. It was more just they wanted to do their own thing, kind of. But then I did still believe that there were certain things that were impeding evangelism or something like that, or just would be better, more liberal. So I struggled with this. How does this all come together? Because so often you see this hypocrisy, and I didn't want that. I didn't want that hypocrisy for myself. But yet, you know, from the Bible, I saw certain things, so I struggled with that. And one day I kind of had an epiphany about this, and I realized that, you know, conservatism has never kept me from reaching out. My laziness, my lack of initiative, that has kept me from reaching out many times. My lack of willingness to do. So as I came to that realization, I determined that I wasn't going to throw out theories about the way church should be run, but I wasn't going to push for change unless I was actually reaching out and I ran up against a problem. This is causing trouble for the kingdom. It wasn't going to become, liberals often say, okay, we can throw this out because, it's not important. The Bible doesn't talk about it. But they turn around, or we turn around and are hypocritical then and make it important by insisting it's thrown out. So my resolution is that I will not make something important unless it becomes important, unless it is impacting the kingdom somehow. And so that's where I find myself. There are some things that I believe in theory, but, you know, I'm young, and I don't know. I'm still learning. And until I actually run into, and, you know, I've found that people are very open when there's actual issues happening. There's actual hurt that is being caused. So that's where I'm at. On this issue. So we're going to look tonight at, I just want to share a little story, first of all. It's a bit of an embarrassing story for me, but I hope that you can benefit from it. There was a guy who I was just a little snooty towards, and I felt a little superior to him whenever I looked at him. He was a lot more conservative than I was, and so I was just, well, you know, I just felt like I knew better than he did. I never really had any antagonism toward him or anything, but I just felt a little superior. Well, one day I discovered that he is reaching out, oh, roughly 100 times as often and as effectively as me to the community, and just really putting me to shame in that area. And I just kind of put the final nail in the coffin of the idea that somehow conservatism or liberalism within the context of our church is somehow pro or con for the kingdom of heaven. And the love we have for each other, the love we have for Christ, the love we have for the community is where what's important. So I stand before you tonight as a bit of an outsider. I'm a transplant. I've only been here a few years. So you'll have to forgive me if some of the things I say may not have a full context of the history here. I've tried to encapsulate it as best I can, but then it also gives me the advantage in that I can safely brag on center a little bit because I didn't build what's here. Well, Jesus did, of course, but I wasn't used by Jesus to build what's here. And so I have gone through this journey, and as I've come to realize this, I very much am blessed by what is here, and the love and care for each other that sees, in spite of diversity, sees a love for each other and a mutual submission, and just the way that church is done here. And we see the legacy of Bishop John. So that's kind of the preamble. This is more of the history of Center, the youth group from 1958, all the shiny new beachy cars. Willie Wagler preaching. We're going to start off the data part of tonight with this kind of chart. Now, we're going to spend a little bit of time on this kind of chart because it's a chart that you're probably not instantly familiar with. And it's a very instructive chart, but it's a little hard to read at first until you get the hang of them. But we'll be showing a lot of them tonight, so we definitely want to take the time to learn how to read it. Each one of these dots is one response. The question that this represents here is that, let me just find it here. Okay, how do you think, and it's a kind of odd question to start with, but these are all by category, I guess. But anyway, it's this. How do you think unmarried young men and women should relate to each other? Number one, and it's a scale of 1 to 10. Number one, there should be as little contact as possible. Number 10, there should be a deep brother-sister relationship where they get to thoroughly know each other. And so each one of these is a response. This is the age of the person responding. So we're looking at the correlation of age to response. So here, the deep brother-sister relation answer is up here. The no contact is down here. And all the possibilities in between. Each one of these dots indicates a response, so you'll both see the agreement and disagreement within an age group, and then also the differences among the ages. The line, then, is the average of all the responses. So it's basically a trend line that shows in this case, the younger folks tend to trend toward this end of the spectrum. They're up here in an average of 7 or so. Of course, there's differences. Whereas the older folks are above 50, are down here 6, 5 or so. So you have from an average about 7 down to an average about 6 or 5. So is that clear how these work? So it's a really cool chart, actually, that you can see at a glance kind of how the responses are. So that's one question. That's kind of as expected, I suppose. Now, the purpose of tonight is, as we better understand our differences, I believe we are better equipped to talk through those differences in love and to live together as brothers and sisters who do a good job of working together as brothers and sisters in a church. And something about a church is, you know, one of the things that has made me sad when there's angry church splits is you end up with two groups that believe so much alike that they often have echo chambers, and it's hard to discover truth in an echo chamber because everyone's saying the same thing, and it's through dissenting viewpoints that our discovery of truth is made more rigorous, and we understand the weaknesses of our beliefs and ways in which we are not properly thinking about truth. And so my one of my visions for church is that there can be a love despite differences, because that strengthens the church and that makes for a stronger church. So my vision for tonight is that as we better understand the ways in which we agree and the ways in which we differ, that will strengthen us and equip us even better to better work together in that ideal. Here's another question that we answered. These are split into 5-year old chunks. And the question here is, how many evenings a week on average do you spend at home versus evenings with the community? So, and this is as one would expect, but it's still very interesting to see it so solidly noted. And I think this is helpful for planning activities and so forth. 16 to 20-year-olds, some still in school, 4 evenings a week on average with the community versus 3 at home. So obviously a very high average for that demographic. 21 to 25, there's a reversal there, and it's about even. And then, it evens out at about 2 evenings with the community. And then when a lot of people have young children, it dips down to 1. And then, I guess after the children are gone, then it's back up. And anyway, you can draw your own conclusions from the data. It levels off then, more evenings at home as folks get older. So, for whatever that's worth. Now, here's where we run into the artifact of this having been a Hutterite thing comparison. Obviously, these are questions that we were actually envisioning to contrast Center and the Hutterite church. And here is just a question about communion. Vast majority, 2 or 4 times a year, 80%. Overwhelming percent, 4 times a year or less. This is another one of those. And I already knew the answer for Center. I just knew in Hutterite circles that this was not this unanimous. So once again, a bit of an artifact. But someone did bring up, a number of people wrote in. Very good points. It's about the response of the person to the sin. It's not about the actual sin. Church decisions. The question here was, let me get it exactly for you. How do you think the church should make decisions? Should it be leader-led, or should the leader try to bring about member consensus? And you see here, the 1 is leader-led, 10 is member consensus. There was a lot of variation here. The majority definitely was up in the member consensus, which is how Center operates. But there was a slight trend line, but broad agreement on this point. As expected here, when asked to self-identify as conservative or liberal, the younger folks tended to, well, there's a wide range, as you can see. Okay, so these are the younger folks, anywhere from 9 to 3, and then the older folks anywhere from, 7 to 1. And so there's a definite trend line, but there's broad views within the groups as well. That's a bit of a tongue-in-cheek picture, of course, because I'm talking about way more than our leaders here. This was a number of questions about sources of authority, and not talking about people here, though people enter in. And So here we have lots of different questions. There was broad agreement on all of these. Heroes was rated very low. Low belief on authority here. Reason was rated pretty highly. Older people was rated very highly as a source of authority. Experts were rated sort of middle of the road. Peers were rated, 7.3, 10 being the most authoritative. Personal experience was rated fairly highly. Government was rated low. And Bible was rated very highly. Tradition was a place that there was some divergence. So we have here at the older end a bit more, but there's still a lot of agreement. There is some divergence. We see you're basically looking at an average of 5 to about 7. So once again, broad agreement just within a 1 or 2 of each other on average, but still just a bit of a trend line that we should be aware of. I was very happy with this. I very much appreciate the teaching of the leaders here in how they teach this, and how that each of us needs to bring our piece as they lead out in setting an agenda for the church. I just very much appreciate each person brings their piece, and through the Holy Spirit revealing from all the people in the church, everyone brings their piece, honestly lays it before the church, and through the discernment of the whole church comes to agreement. And we just see very broad agreement here, and I'm very happy with this. And I want to thank the leaders for saying that. I mean, for teaching this, and for the members for believing this. This was an interesting one. It was something I'm not sure. I don't think I did a very good job of writing this one out on the survey. Let me just read what I put. Okay, so how much weight do you give to the following sources of belief, truth, action? The subgroup that you want to belong to, and then I gave examples of this subgroup, the cool crowd, the holy crowd, the mature crowd, the smart crowd, the artistic crowd, the hardworking crowd. I think we as people, in general, we have certain ideals that we strive toward, and the people we want to be like, and we tend to identify the people who do a good job at being like that. And so that's what I meant to say here. But then there was, my thought on the issue is that when someone is completely taught, he will be like his teacher. And so who we desire to be like is in general who we will become like. But then there was some variants of responses here. This one made me very happy, and it's hard to follow, but I think it has some really good things in it. This is spending priorities, and when we split the church here into 10-year chunks, and did spending priorities. The easiest way to follow this is just looking at looking at them one at a time. So let's start with local missions, and that was at the top of the list for all groups. And so this is kind of an upside down chart. It's number one. It's the number one priority is at the bottom, of course. And so here with the younger folks, there's less agreement. And okay, so the closer together the dots are, the less agreement there was within that age group. And so there was a little less agreement here. On the ones that are further apart, there was more, tend to be more agreement So these are the averages of everyone's rankings together. So, but it was still number one here, local missions. And you can just follow this through. This group here had, just through a statistical anomaly, had only like two or three people in it, and they didn't agree. So you can pretty much, I think, throw this one out because it like I said, it's really a statistical accident kind of. And so don't worry too much about that. So let's just skip over that pretty much. But basic agreement here, local missions is the most important priority, spending priority for money here here at Center. Foreign missions is this one right here, and it follows closely behind. The only place where it's switched is here. And once again, families with young children here, and this is as it should be according to the Bible. Living facilities, and we define that as house, food, that sort of thing. And here, that eclipsed foreign missions for this age group. But other than that, foreign missions was second. Next was living facilities, and you can follow the trend line there. And it's once again interesting to note here, it didn't start out with all that great importance with the younger group, but then when they're responsible for themselves and they have a family, they're responsible for a family, that jumps in importance. And as family tapers off, as they're responsible for only themselves again, or perhaps children are responsible for them, or whatever the case may be, that just tapers off. Then business, not much importance for the younger ones. As family come into the picture again, more important, and then as older, less important. Education is, once again, it's not very important for those that don't have to pay for it themselves. But when young families come along, it becomes very important, and then tapers off throughout life. Non-Mennonite missions was next here. Travel is next. Once again, as expected, the younger set liked the travel a little more, but it was one of the last three, which is appropriate. And then recreation, and then luxury being the last, which is understandable in any religious survey that's not done by Joyce Meyer or someone like that. So, health and wealth gospel. Okay, good. Let's... one comment that I wanted to make on this, I sent this to Arlen Knisley for a more detailed response, and he had a really good comment that I'd just like to read tonight on this thing of spending priorities, because it just gives some needed context, I think. And now, we did decide to go with this 1 through 10, and probably it would have been better done as a 1 through 10, rank. We did it in a rank. So you had to choose number 1, then number 2, then third most important, fourth most. We probably should have done it, 1 to 10. You can do any number for any. But I kind of wanted to see, if push comes to shove, what's really most important? Well, as Arlen pointed out, that's probably not quite as reasonable as reality is. And then there's also something else to consider. Where are we? Okay, here we go. Arlen says, I'm probably too analytical, but I can't unequivocally prioritize any of the top five that I've indicated below. I will say that unless business or education or anything else on the list, for that matter, is a means to the end of kingdom building, whether through enhancing our ability to glorify God or in Great Commission efforts, I drop it below the uses that are. And so you see on this list a lot of things that have the potential to be used selfishly, the potential to be used for the kingdom, and obviously that really becomes the bottom line question on these. Nonetheless, it is interesting to see what people's instincts are. One thing that I've been really blessed with here is just seeing the legacy that we are inheriting from the older group here at Center. and you see that the spending priorities on missions, that didn't happen accidentally or in a vacuum. It was clearly the example of the older folks that have made so that is so important all throughout here. And in fact, all of these, and we're going to get into education here, and once again, it's the legacy that we've been given that is just so helpful. These are all pictures of local missions, our highest priority, as listed. Now, you'll notice mostly young people on here. And I kind of had the mistaken impression the first year or half year that I was here that it was just kind of the young people doing missions here. And we tend to be better at marketing, which I think the biblical term is blowing your own horn or something like that. And at least I tend to blow my own horn when I do good, you know. Make sure everyone sees my tithing and my missions and my other things like that. And so you see lots of pictures here. I have come to realize and appreciate that it's actually, there are so many of you older brothers just doing wonderful work. And I know Paul, I've heard more through Hands of Christ as well, how much. I think us younger ones need to look a little more for doing a little marketing for you guys, because you guys are really good examples, and I want to hear more of what you guys have been doing, and I'd love to hear more of your stories of some of the ways that you've reached out. This is a modern day Pilgrim School, and I'm not sure whether maybe can someone help me out? Is this this is probably public school, but taught by someone from Center or the Amish Church. Can someone help me what era this would have been? Okay, very well. Okay. Well, I'm afraid I can't answer that. And if no one's going to volunteer, I think we'll have to move on. But this is something that Kansas has a reputation for, is a love of education. And it wasn't my generation that suddenly brought this into being. It's a long legacy of that, a love of education. And I'm just going to skip forward here, and we'll come back to this. This picture I think you've seen recently as well, but I just bring this up to highlight. This is the Dale Carnegie Leadership Course in 1962, and the 11 of the 36 students here in Hutch, this is a picture of the graduates, 11 of the 36 are from Center back in 1962. And so that just shows the love of education from Center's very beginning. There is a love of education across the demographics. There's especially broad support here for high school. As you can see, just very solid support all the way across the top for high school. And then, of course, levels on down, but all concentrated at the top. There is a slight average trend line. The younger people are just slightly more into it, but the difference is very small, actually. The difference starts to get a little bigger when you talk about conservative Mennonite college or Bible institute, such as Faith Builders or SMBI or CBS. Those three were all given as examples on the survey, though obviously they're not monolithic, but that general category of institutions. And so there's a bit more, but still very strong support for it. Where you start to see a real divergence is in secular college and in non-Anabaptist Bible college. So you're talking, we're talking places, just secular colleges, and then places like Liberty University or other places like that. I better keep moving. Once again, these are things to be aware of, and I think it does us well to be aware of these differences of belief. And And we as younger folks need to hear what are some of the reasons. And I have been, and it's been good, and it has shaped me to hear some of the wisdom that underlies these beliefs. And I just appreciate so much the example I've seen here of I hear so often from the older generation that they want to hear my opinions about things, and they want to hear what I believe, and they take an interest in my life, and they take an interest in the lives of the younger set. And I just, that example in turn calls us to do the same to the older generation. And I hope that this can encourage that kind of dialogue and that sharing of beliefs and sharing of wisdom that underlies these beliefs. This is probably one of the most divergent set of beliefs in this survey, and understandably so. Let me just read the question here. How excited are you about members of your community making a living in the fine arts, such as singing, painting, photography, etc.? Number one, should not happen. Number 10, we need more people doing so. So that's the question. And it's not monolithic. I mean, there's variance, on both sides. It's not like it's one side against the other, but there is a strong trend line. And so this is something we need to have a discussion about, because this is important. This is important stuff, and we need to hear why, and we need to express why, and we need to learn from each other. This next question was worded a little awkwardly for me. I mean, on my part, I wrote, or I'll blame the other three as well. We wrote, do you agree or disagree with this statement? Young women should pursue careers until they get married. Now, I think most people understood that as meaning pursuing careers, until if they get married. I think all of us would. I think I can speak for the young folks to say that we would agree with the title of the book by Anita Yoder, "For Young Women: Life Is for Living, Not for Waiting Around," and that's what we were. That's the context that we're thinking of when we formed this question. The other potentially confusing part of this question is career can be seen as a lifelong pursuit, whereas we were thinking more in the realm of short term, in the realm of just a job or a ministry or that sort of thing. So I don't hold this as entirely authoritative because of some of those issues, but those are the results. There's definitely more support among the younger folks for careers for women before marriage versus after. It's not dramatic, but this is just a quick, and I need to keep moving. This is just a correlation between amount of reading and support of Mennonite College, secular college. We won't spend a lot of time on that. The results are as you might expect. Something we learned in worldviews class is that the texts that define a culture, or the texts that people read, are what define a culture and define the worldview of a culture. And so this was something that was emphasized a lot. Now, these are some of the authors that were mentioned, though it's not necessarily a representative sample, but these are a few of the authors. And so this is very important. What we read very much influences and is a reflection of our beliefs. Okay, here we go. This, backing up a little bit, this is news. This is the smartphone generation. The younger folks tend more higher percentage multiple times a day. Check the news. You have the newspaper generation. And that tells us sort of generational stuff. This is volume of reading, or This is self-reported volume of reading. So among this age group, this is the breakdown. 14 plus, 9 to 13 books per year. Sorry, books per year. 14 plus, 9 to 13, 4 to 8, 0 to 3. The younger half is this. Looking at these numbers, I sense some optimism on my half of the the divide. Some optimism on the number of books that we do read, but that's good. That's good. We want to keep up that optimism. So these are the types of books that people said that they prefer. You have fiction, and you know this report is in written form in the back. I put 10 copies back there. Feel free to pick them up to look at them. They will go to the library. You also have the option to purchase one for like $4 or something. So I'm going to put a sheet in the back if you want to purchase a copy or if you want to be emailed a PDF of it. I can do that as well. So just we'll allow you to mark that in the back. So some of this stuff, for sake of time, I got to keep going. But you can look at this data later. It will be available. These are the favorite authors listed. The older group, by far, Elizabeth Elliot was a favorite, followed by Oswald Chambers, Dorcas Smooker, Patricia St. John, C.S. Lewis, Max Lucado. This is a word cloud. The bigger the word, the more times it was mentioned. For the younger group, C.S. Lewis is the 800-pound gorilla, and he is double the next. He was mentioned twice as many times as the next group. So C.S. Lewis, very influential. Among the 16 to 49-year-old group, followed by Philip Yancey, Francis Chan, which is due in large part to the youth group studying one of his books for Bible study recently, I'm guessing, Ravi Zacharias, surprisingly to make this list, John Grisham, Paula Reinhart, J.R.R. Tolkien, George MacDonald, Anne Voskamp, John Piper, Elizabeth Elliot, Leo Tolstoy, Max Lucado, and Charles Dickens. This is just a combination of the two. The younger group gave a lot more authors than the older group, so it kind of overwhelms it. Free time. It was an open-ended question. What do you like to do in your free time? The younger group younger group and the older group. It was pretty overwhelming there that read. Some other things the younger group listed: family, Bible, community. And these are in descending order of frequency. Family, Bible, community, church, friends, books, electricity, food, husband, shelter, music, internet, transportation. These were, I got a lot of questions on this one because, I mean, how do you answer a question? What things are important to you? We weren't looking for a theologically correct answer, which are the most important, or a physically correct, more a gut feeling is what we were hoping for. And I think we got that. Just interesting are the words that the younger group gave that the older group tended to not have given. Does that make sense? So these are the words the younger group gave that the older group didn't. Books, electricity, shelter, internet, and transportation. Those were the ones of the younger group that were unique to the younger group. The older group, in descending order again, family, Bible, church, Christ, community, friends, work, food, health. The three that the older group gave that the younger group didn't: Christ, work, and health. It's just an amalgamation of both. I got my things mixed up. I am sorry. I should have yelled at myself there. Someone should have yelled at me. I was telling you the important things, and I was showing you the free time. I'm very sorry. Get in a rush and mess things up. So anyway, here's the younger group. I'm very sorry about that. And once again, you can look. We are almost out of time, so you can look at these. Free time was much more monolithic. It was just read, basically. That was a hard one for me to answer, too. Free time. What do you do with your free time? So, that was a little fast, especially toward the end. The first part was a very personal sharing of where I'm at, and along with a lot of good lessons that I've learned from Grandpa, that I've learned from the church here. I've been so blessed by the church here, by the leadership, the way that church is done here. And as we continue to speak to each other, as we continue to seek Christ, as we continue to work to find truth, as we continue to serve the community, love each other, despite these small differences, we saw some small differences, we saw some bigger differences sometimes, but the most important thing and what blesses me so much is the unity of purpose in loving each other and caring for each other, and for working together to make God's name known in our community. That ultimately is what is important. And I just want to bless you as a church, us as a church, as we seek to do this. And hopefully this can be a tool that allows us to better understand the church as a whole. And in that understanding, be better equipped to love each other and to come to full unity. So I'll just end with a word of prayer then. Father, I just thank you so much for your incredible blessings to us, and for that you are our Father and that we are your children. And thank you that, and I'm just amazed at that you would desire to show yourself through us. And Lord, I pray that as we live for you, that our unity, that we would be unified, and that we would have a love for each other, and that we would have, that we would just live in unity. And Lord Jesus, you prayed for us that through that unity, that people could see you and see the unity that you have with the Father. And Lord, just help us to live up to that high standard, and help our love for each other to reveal your glory. And just fill us with your Spirit. We can't do it by ourselves. We can't. I'm totally incapable of doing that by myself. And I just pray that you would fill us. We're so naturally selfish, Lord. And just help us to keep the bigger picture in mind, just the vision for your kingdom. Thank you for the way you've been doing that. Thank you for the way you've been building your church. And thank you for the way that the gates of hell, you promised the gates of hell, will not prevail against it. And so, Lord, I just pray a rich blessing on the church here that you would continue to work and lead. In Jesus' name, amen. Blessings to you. You're dismissed.